Okay, so today is the 24th of May, 2018, the 10th of Sivan, Tavshinayin Ches, and as promised, we'll continue on with our discussion. Well, let's kind of start from the beginning. Our discussion with regard of Halacha Day for the 21st Perek of
Vayikra. It's the 21st Perek.
Oh, it is, yes. Okay, so very beginning of the parsha begins with Amorakolanim b'nei Aaron l'nefesh lo yitama b'yamav. Right, that's the words. I'm also opening to the page. Yes, l'nefesh lo yitama b'yamav. That he may not contaminate, he may not become tamei to dead people amongst his people. So that is a challenge, right? Kohanim are not permitted to become tamei l'meis. Now, there's much of the halachos of tumah. Where does one look for the halachos of tumah v'tara? So one would look towards the section of taros. Now most of taros is there's no gemara on it. And one reads it as, oh, this is relevant. But truth is, it's very relevant. It turns very relevant with regards to kohanim, and it becomes even more relevant for kohanim in the modern age. So the old questions of kohanim with regards to tumas kohanim were the status of them in the houses, mostly halachos of olos. There's a halacha of sof tumas latzeis, which is a very important halacha of zman hazeh, and that is that a kohen, is that if a dead body not only is the place where it is tamei, but any place where it will be, or it's expected to be, is also considered tamei and has all the impacts thereof. So, for instance, in a hospital, if there's a dead body in a room someplace, but it's going to be coming out the hospital, so that then causes the entire area where it's coming come out. So in the old days, it would just come out the front door through the lobby. So that would then be a problem. Nowadays, it's not really done that way. It's brought out through the back. But they need to be accommodated. The halachos of Tumah V'Tahara have to be accommodated for a friend, a chaver of mine from Yeshiva, Rabbi Jaffe, has an article on this topic. Actually, I believe it's him. Has an article in the RGJ Journal on this topic about Tumah issues with regards to Kohanim in hospitals. We can take a look there. It wasn't what I was planning on discussing today. However, in Eretz Yisrael, I am told, I don't think I've been in a hospital in Israel maybe ever, but there are signs up, there are lights for Kohanim. You've seen such things, Alan?
Yes, I have.
Okay. There are signs for Kohanim directing them where they're permitted to go and where they're not permitted to go. So that takes place there, although I don't know of any place in America where that takes place. Even Maimonides Hospital in Brooklyn, I don't know if that would exist there. Fine. But that is one very important area for Kohanim to be involved. Another important area is with cemeteries. Are Kohanim permitted to go to cemeteries? So the answer is no. The assumption is that they will walk over dead bodies. They would become tamei in that way. Started talking about this the other day, somebody raised the issue of visiting the Ohel, the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So I have heard rumors, although I don't know if it exists, that they have special boxes for them to walk in.
Yes.
I looked around on the internet. I didn't see anything about the boxes, but I did see the following. This guy, I did notice this when I went to the Ohel a while back, and I noticed that on the way, if you walk to the Rebbe, you are surrounded on both sides by a fence. Mm. Right, there is a little banister that takes you along. So that actually has halachic significance. The halacha is in Shulchan Aruch Simen Kuf. Shin Ayin Aleph, I believe. Shin Ayin Aleph Sif Dalid. If it's not there, it's someplace around there. That a Kohen is not permitted to. Not only is he not permitted to go on top of a corpse, you're also not allowed to go within Dalit Amos of a corpse, unless there is a fence there. If there's a fence there, he's allowed to get closer. But the Shulchan Aruch actually paskins, you're only allowed to come within 4 tfachim of the fence. So about, that gives you about, depending on what your sheet is, 12 to 15 inches or so. You still have to be separated from the fence. So I didn't. So I went to. I found out this discussion. I think on Chabad.org, it commented this that you're permitted to. A Kohen is permitted to go to the Ohel as long as he walks down that passageway, separated by the fences, and has to stay at least 12 inches away from the fence on both sides. Now,
yeah, right.
I'm not sure that's possible to do.
How wide the whole path is.
Exactly. So it's not a very wide path. It wasn't like the cemetery was designed with, oh, one day we're going to have this celebrity in the middle of the cemetery, and we're going to want Kohanim to be able to get there. It wasn't designed in that way. It's a narrow path. I'm not even sure it's possible. I'm not even sure there's it's 3 feet wide. So that doesn't really give a Kohen much leeway to go. I don't know what the common practice is, if Kohanim go or if they don't know.
It's not 3 feet wide.
It's not very wide. It's 4 feet wide. And there's no markings. I mean, if I were designing it really with this in mind, I would maybe put a marking down and say, you know, Kohen can only walk between these lines. Whatever. I don't know if the common practice amongst Chabad Hasidim is to go or not to go. If a Kohen would ask me, if somebody without strong Chabad leanings, I would not advise them to take such a trip. There are other issues along these lines as well. Such as trees qualify as an ohel, and if a tree is half in a cemetery and half out of the cemetery, so then you could potentially have tumasa ohel issues there as well. So there is actually an organization in, I think it's in New York, that goes around trying to make sure trees that are close to Jewish cemeteries and also crossover roads are cut. One prominent place by me, I grew up in Queens, so on Main Street in Queens, there is a very large cemetery there that goes all the way really across Kew Garden Hills, and right on Main Street, right down the block from where all the kosher pizza stores, where a lot of the kosher pizza stores are, there's on Main Street, there is the cemetery with the trees with pretty heavy foliage that cross over onto Main Street. So I don't know, the Kohanim have to follow their instructions as to where they are supposed to go. Also, the Jackie Robinson Parkway, formerly known as the Interborough, also has a similar issue. It goes right through a Jewish cemetery with very heavy trees on both sides. So for Kohanim to travel on that is questionable, unless, of course, this organization has been doing their work and cutting trees appropriately.
You're talking, but even that Kohanim can't travel even in a car.
So even in a car actually leads to our topic that I actually wanted to discuss a little bit more at length, and that is the more modern issue of Kohanim going on airplanes. Do we have any Kohanim in the room, by the way? No Kohanim in the room.
What about ancient civilizations like Israel, for instance, that they build on top of
the assumption is they might be building buildings on top of other buildings, but the assumption is that Jews always buried their dead outside of the city. So I don't think we just walk around assuming that there happen to be people there. Now, this is a major issue in Israel. Whenever they try digging anything, they always find some kind of bones or something there. And there is a group of Haredim come and protest that you can't build there, etc. And that's one of the many, many reasons why it takes a very, very long time to do anything in Israel to build. There is a Gemara that talks about that land outside of Eretz Yisrael is considered Becheskes Tumas Meis. All land outside of Eretz Yisrael is considered Becheskes Tumas Meis because during the time of the flood, there are people that are buried, people died all over the place, and they were buried. That's one of the reasons that is given. But anyways, l'halacha, that actually is on the books. Why Kohanim are allowed to live outside of Eretz Yisrael is a question why they're permitted to do so. But anyways, there are Kohanim that live outside of Israel, but the Gemara has this assumption of that, but only for lands outside of Eretz Yisrael. I once commented to one of my rebbeim that I would maybe make the chazaka in Eretz Yisrael, not outside of Eretz Yisrael, but anyways, that's not...
Does it even matter without a base of Mikdash?
So it doesn't necessarily matter for you because you're not of the priestly class.
So there.
But for those of the priestly class, there is a pasuk.
They have a function, really.
Well, one second.
The first Aliyah.
Well, she's going to be here anyway.
No, but what I'm saying, without the base of Mikdash, what's their function?
Well, we had that. We had that in our parak here. That they are the Rishonim. First of all, the Rishonim point out that they're supposed to be the teachers. They're supposed to be the ones who are leaders of the people. But besides that, they are endowed with an extra level of Kedusha. They perform extra mitzvos, and therefore they have extra levels of responsibility. So even though Bruce wants to say, well, I want more for my money, I want them to bring my korbanos too. Sorry, the Torah indicates otherwise. I don't believe there's anybody who...
They do give us a blessing, right?
They give us the blessing. Look, they get up and sing in front of all of us. That's not easy to do.
They'd be ready to do it.
So says Sam, there's an idea that they have to be ready to do avoda. So that is an interesting idea. Is that really a thing? I don't.
At least intellectually. I mean, maybe not. Maybe because of the tumah issue, they're not ready, but they have to know.
Yes. So there are interesting indications of of that halacha. One is the Gemara itself actually suggests that maybe Kohanim should never drink any liquor, because at any point the Beis HaMikdash doesn't come, they better be ready to do avodah. And then there is other sort of minhagei chasidus along those lines throughout history. They say the urban legend is that the Chafetz Chaim never wore glasses, because he said, look, I'm a Kohen, and it could be that one day the Beis HaMikdash will come, and it's possible that they might want to appoint me to be the Kohen Gadol, or really just a regular Kohen. I'm not sure why you have to add in the Kohen Gadol piece. And wearing and having glasses on may be considered marbe begadol, may be considered having extra articles of clothing on, and therefore he never wanted to wear glasses, because he didn't want to grow accustomed to them and have that need. Nowadays they would just get LASIK. Nowadays we solve the problem with getting LASIK. Anyways, that's the rumor that they had about it. The other, yes. Of course.
Was this planned?
Of course. Oh, we have a Kohen in the room. There we go. Okay. Of course, the other reason why the Chafetz Chaim may not have worn glasses is because he may not have needed them. That's the other possible reason. There are other interesting Kohanim Minhagim. My roommate is a Kohen, Rabbi Brand, who's now Rosh Kol in Chicago. So he had the custom of not cutting his thumbnail, because he may need it one day to do Malika. There are certain things that they sort of, I don't know if there's really a halachic basis for them more than just sort of a minhag chasidus, zecher lemikdash, things of that nature.
But they'll be ready.
The other issue of that goes along these lines does have to do with tumah, and that is there is a dispute about what if a kohen is already tameh and becomes more tameh. So if a kohen is tameh and walks into a he's already in a cemetery, can become tameh can become more tameh. So the Gemara seems to say that you're not chayv, the Rambam says you're not chayv makos for it. So what does it mean that you're not chayv makos for it? It's always a code word. Yes, no, maybe. Is that usser? Is it not usser? Etc. The assumption is that they are not permitted to extend their kohan. They would only be chayv makos if they extend the period of their tumah. So there's a waiting period after one becomes tameh. So by extending it, that's when you do chayv makos. To just remain tameh at that time is a problem. There is a suggestion that is attributed to Rav Gorin that there's always a question about kohanim going to medical school.
Right.
So there is a suggestion that Rav Gorin put out that, well, there is a halacha called Cherev Harehu Kachalal, that the sword, meaning the metal instrument that comes in contact with the dead, has the din of the dead. It also becomes just as tameh as the corpses. So he suggested that have a watch touch the corpse. It becomes tameh. The kohen puts on the watch, and then he remains tumas mace as long as he has the watch on, and therefore there would be no prohibition of him coming in contact with another corpse. So that's built on many assumptions that are questionable and hasn't been accepted practically, lahalacha. Okay? Anyways, now maybe we'll get to what I actually wanted to speak about, and that is Kohanim traveling on planes. So there are two Kohanim traveling on planes issues. One is the flying over a cemetery, and the other one is bodies that are underneath that are actually on the plane, and they perhaps are resolved in different ways. So number one, so would we assume, just at first glance, do you see it as being a problem or not a problem, a Kohen traveling over a cemetery?
Problem.
Why is it a problem?
Because
the tumah goes up ad l'rakia, right? That is the din. We assume that tumah goes up ad l'rakia. So number one, Rav Shechter actually discusses in our, there is an article that Rav Shechter has. This is in Sefer Bikviat Son Simon Lamed Hay, where he discusses begeder ha'isr de tumas kohenim. Now the legend has it that the kolel that I learned in when I was in yeshiva was the Mark Hose and Adina Katz kolel, sponsored by Mark Hose and Adina cats. I see he were Kohanim. He didn't really come show up too often. Also, the rumor had it that he was some kind of arms dealer or something, lived in Mexico. But he did come once, which actually led to perhaps the most embarrassing personal experience of my rabbinate when I told this story before.
To some of us.
The very, very short part of it is that they asked me to speak at this luncheon honoring the Rosh Kollel, and I got all my whole Dvar Torah ready to go, and then Rav Schechter got up to speak right before me and gave my exact Dvar Torah before I had a chance to get up. Yes.
Pure coincidence, or that timing?
It's a very existential question you just raised. I just got up and read it again. What was I supposed to do, you know? Had I been more experienced, I would have told more jokes. But
it was on the Parsha of the week. You need to say
it wasn't even the Parsha of the week.
Really,
it was about honoring. It was about honoring those that sponsor Torah and things like that. So, yeah. All right. Anyways. And he was better. He had a whole story to go along. Ugh. It was so awkward. But anyways,
I would say that it's okay to fly over something.
Yes, so what is your reasoning?
Because it's going too fast. The speed of the plane.
Yes. So in order for you to claim that, you would have to have a makor for that. Now, there are makoros, actually, that suggest that possibility. Not necessarily about a plane, but somebody that maybe one only becomes tummy if you stop, not if you continue to move. But that is not proven, and we don't pass in that way. What?
Tummy moves at the speed of light.
Tummy can move at the speed of light, correct. But can one attract tumah if they don't stop moving? So I actually saw that is suggested, but not accepted la halacha. So Rav Schechter, anyways, at this, when he became Rosh Kol, or when Mr. Katz dedicated the Kol, one of those events way before I was ever in yeshiva, so Rav Schechter had to give a shir in honor of Mr. Katz coming, and the shir was it permissible for Mr. Katz to fly in to come to the dedication ceremony today, where he discussed this issue. So one of the things that he discusses is that the Gemara actually says that Tuma is Ola Ad Le'anavin, it goes up into the clouds. Yes. So is that Ad B'chlal or Ad V'lo Ad B'chlal? Does it include even in the clouds? Maybe it only goes up until the clouds. So that's one suggestion. But even so, it doesn't really solve the problem. I believe Kennedy Airport is surrounded by cemeteries on three sides. LaGuardia Airport also has cemeteries in pretty close proximity to LaGuardia Airport. And in Eretz Yisrael also, there's a cemetery pretty close to the airport as well. So it doesn't really solve that many problems.
I don't know the answer, but... In fact, you're in a metal can, a metal shell.
Okay. So let's just go with one more issue that Schechter raises, and then we'll get into the metal shells issue. So Schechter, I think what he goes by is that he suggests that the Isser of Kohanim becoming Tami Lames is not about them becoming Tami Lames, but about them becoming Karov Lames, becoming close to the dead. That maybe there is a permissibility, maybe right, the Kohen's prohibition is to be close with the dead, not necessarily to become Tami. And there is a distinction between that. So it could be that flying way above a cemetery where you don't have any real proximity to the dead, no relationship to the dead that's underneath. So maybe that's not a violation of what the Kohen's halacha is. And he, over the course of his article, brings many things that could suggest such a conclusion. With that, you would of course disprove the Rav Gorin watch theory, because it's not about tameh; it's about becoming close to the dead. There's other ideas, those are other suggestions as well that he has over the course of that article, but that is what his suggestion is. Yeah? I don't see too many other eitzes with regards to Kohanim going on the planes in terms of going over cemeteries. Why would you just say that the plane is chotzeitz, that the plane that causes a separation? So there's two issues with that. So number one is something called an ohel zarek, that a plane probably has the lacha, what we refer to as an ohel zarek, a flying ohel. So it's a flying ohel chotzeitz. Does it cease the tuma from rising? So we paskin no. Now it is a bit of a, there seems to be a bit of a steer in the Rambam, and it might only be an Isser Durabanan, but even so, as Orthodox Jews, we attempt to observe Isser Durabanan as well. So just saying, I'm on a plane that's flying over on top of it, then the bottom of the plane should be the Chatzitza, so That is questionable. The other piece is questionable is whether a plane would actually qualify as a chatzitza, because the plane itself is possibly makabel tuma. Why would I say only possibly? So why would I say it is makabel tuma? Because we assume that planes are metal, and metal is makabel tuma, and therefore the plane itself would become tame, and therefore it wouldn't be considered a chatzitza. So the flip side of that is to say that, well, what actually are planes made out of? So planes, at least over the last couple of decades, have been made of?
Aluminum.
Yes, they're made of aluminum. So there is a pasuk in Parshas Matos, where Matos or Maseh? Matos, I believe, where it talks about the clay Midian, the kalim that they were able to find in Midian, and the list six metals, and one of those six metals is not aluminum. So maybe it's only those six metals and not just anything that physicists label as metal. So Rav Moshe suggests this in the tshuva. Rav Moshe has a tshuva. It's in chelik v'yerdei chelik beis simin kuf samach dalid. Imutter l'koin lisa be'airplane shemulich. Actually, this is the second half of the question about the mace being on the plane. You know, let's just hold off. It's important to remember, he paskins its usher about a Kohen going on the plane with the dead on it for this reason, but he goes to suggest and say, but you know, it really could be that that aluminum doesn't qualify as being one of the metals that would. That would be considered makabel tuma.
So
there is another
usher because
what?
It's usher because he said.
He says it's usher. He says usher because you're in the same clay. He says it's usher for that reason, but then suggests. But you know what? It might be, but he's not willing to rely on it. Now he doesn't quote any source for this. Rabbi Daniel Wolf, who is a Rebbe at Yeshivat Har Etzion. He has an article available on the Har Etzion the VBM website, about Kohanim flying on airplanes. And he also he spoke on one of the headlines episodes in the last couple of months. So he points out that this is a sheet in the Rishonim, that he found there's a Rashi in Masechus Rosh Hashanah that seems to indicate this way. It's not just Rav Moshe's Kiddush that it's only one of those six things. There is a later Jew which some point to and say that Rav Moshe became more convinced of this idea later on, and that is in Hilchos Tevilas Kelim. He has a Shaila about bringing aluminum pans to the mikvah. So does one have to tovel all of their aluminum pans? That would put a real damper on using aluminum pans. So he, on one hand, says aluminum is not one of the six metals, and therefore wouldn't require tevila as a metal, but would require tevila as glass. It's like a close enough to metal that would require it on a level of derabanan. So he would require it for that reason, but then goes on to claim that it's not a kli, that it's not a vessel, and therefore aluminum that doesn't qualify as a vessel unless it has a permanent status. And aluminum pans that are only used two or three times, he says, or maybe three or four times, but only a few times, never attains the status of a kli and therefore doesn't require tevilas kelim.
You're talking about aluminum pans that you're buying are disposable. But you can
yes, disposable aluminum pans, right? Right.
So,
okay.
What is all this?
My wife puts an aluminum foil under there.
Aluminum foil certainly is not a kli. Yes.
Yeah, no, under the bump in the aluminum.
Your wife could do what she likes.
No, I'm not.
Okay. I have no protest against aluminum. Yes.
So, what does any of this have to do with?
So if it's an aluminum airplane is not, if aluminum is not makabel tuma, if it doesn't accept tuma, so then it would have more of a status of being a separation. Now it won't necessarily help with regards to the flying over the cemeteries, because in that case the cemetery it's what we call an oel zarek relative to the cemetery. It's just a flying piece of metal or like a flying carpet, which isn't going to cause an interruption. But where it might help for the flying over the cemeteries, you need, I think, Rav Shechter's chiddush. I'm not sure there's really any much better options than that. But with regards to mace on the plane, it could help. Because there, you have it's not flying over, you have a kli. The plane itself qualifies as a kli. There's a separation in the kli. So if that separation is made of a non Tuma material, it could actually cause a separation between the top and the bottom of the plane, and that's what many rely on. That's what many rely on for this to be matir kohanim going on El Al. He adds another idea, and that is that.
And sometimes they all will transport bodies back to Israel.
Not sometimes, almost always.
Yeah.
Almost every El Al plane has bodies.
Right.
Yeah. The other idea that he discusses is the concept of the concept of tumah that is entirely absorbed. Not absorbed, that it's totally contained in something else. The terminology, what? Summit patil is the terminology of it, that if it's a totally sealed, separate area, so it doesn't necessarily solve the problem, because that if it's totally sealed, the tumah does rise up. However, if it's totally sealed in material that is not makabel tumah, and also has an additional seal on it, so then we could assume that that actually contains the tumah within it. So apparently the Chevra Kedisha has created such compartments that they use to transport these bodies that fit these regulations. Now, does that really work, Lemaisa? It's also a bit of a suffix, but you put the two of them together, Rabbi Wolf is pretty convinced that that is a sufficient heter to permit Kohanim traveling on planes. He does point out at the end that learning Taros is an interesting thing, because the rules aren't so well established. The halachos aren't as firm as they are in other areas of halacha, and you're sort of left on your own to start passing between Rishonim, meaning in Hilchos Shabbos. We're never going to say, well, the Rashi is this and Rambam is like this, and I like Rambam better, right? We have a Shulchan Aruch, we have a Mishnah Berurah, we have many generations of those that have directed the halacha. In some areas of halacha, you're left kind of trying to figure out on your own almost which argument you like more, with sometimes very practical ramifications. So anyways, these certainly are halacha l'maisa, applies to Kohanim Bizman Azeh 100%, and Mirsa Hashem, they should live to see the day when it applies to all of us, and we all have to be careful. We'll be visiting the base of English. Amen. Yes.
I don't know if this is good, but it's interesting about planes flying.